As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
Imagine yourself 5 years ago in February 2019. A lot may have changed for you since then, but in all that time, Barcelona haven't lost at home. At the weekend, that changed.
That's it. It's a Chelsea masterclass. They have come to Barcelona and they will take a lead back to Stamford Bridge.
Yes, Chelsea beat the Champions League holders 1-0 in the first leg of the semi-final. So how did Chelsea pull off that defensive masterclass? And have they poked the bear? I'm Sophie Penny and from The Athletic, this is Full Time Europe. Both of my guests today were out in Barcelona for this match. It's The Athletic's women's football reporter, Charlotte Harper, and The Athletic's Barcelona reporter, Laia Cervello Herrero. Hola a todas.
Hola.
So as Emma Hayes said, it is only halftime in this tie. There's still the second leg at Stamford Bridge to play, but we have to chat about how Chelsea pulled off this victory in Barcelona's own backyard. You two were watching it sitting next to each other. Laia, I'll come to you first. You can't be used to seeing Barcelona losing. What was your reaction to that result?
I mean, Charlotte saw it because she was sitting next to me and I was between all the British journalists, which was so fun and so cruel at the same time. but yeah, I think we were used to seeing Barca losing like many years ago, and now it seems like a decade or something like that. So it was kind of weird, but at the same time, I think Chelsea deserved it. So it was a deserved result.
I mean, the stats are a bit ridiculous, aren't they? They haven't lost at all in 11 months. They've only not scored once before in their last 39 Champions League games. It's a bit ridiculous. Charlotte, from the Chelsea side, Emma Hayes has finally defeated Barcelona, the only club she's never beaten in Europe of all the 19 she's faced. Were you a bit surprised given Chelsea's form going into the game? They just missed out on the Conti Cup, the FA Cup in the past few weeks.
I was surprised. I think the biggest fear was Chelsea losing 3-4-0 and just taking nothing back to Stamford Bridge. So very pleasantly surprised. Different reaction when that Cuthbert goal went in to Laia. But yeah, it's all to play for in that second leg. And I think poking the bear, will come onto that, Sophie, but I can't wait for Saturday.
I can just imagine the two of you, Charlotte, kind of jumping for joy and Laia head in her hands when that Cuthbert goal went in. And we do have to remember that this matchup has history, doesn't it? Chelsea lost that Champions League final in 2021 to Barcelona 4-0. And then they lost again to Barcelona in the semi-finals last year, 2-1 on aggregate. Barcelona, two-time winners, and Chelsea have never won that Champions League. So it was quite a result. And I think, Charlotte, what you pointed out in your article, and it really stood out to me when I watched as well, was Chelsea's defence. You called it Herculean. I think Laia's called it the English wall. How was it so effective?
Hayes, tactically, spot on. The game plan and the players executed. So started off as a back five, three centre-backs, so from right to left, Carter, Buchanan and Neve Charles playing a left-sided centre-back role, which I wouldn't have predicted that. And so Charles therefore doubling up with Ashley Lawrence as the left fullback to really nullify Caroline Graham Hansen, who on her day is just devastating, and we saw that last year. On the right side, Kanarid was supporting Carter, and I thought Kanarid had a brilliant game. Just so much energy, so much running. So with that back five, that means that when they don't have the ball, they have that cover for Barcelona's fullbacks when they push up. But then in possession, those fullbacks can really bomb forward and press Barcelona. And I was surprised that Barcelona's fullbacks kind of dropped off quite a bit. And that midfield, just restricting Barcelona's space, really aggressive. Not in the first couple of minutes. I think that's where Barcelona should have harmed Chelsea, because there are a couple of nerves, you could see it. But as the game got on in the kind of 10, 15 minutes, Chelsea became more aggressive on the front foot and just made their presence known and weren't bullied by Barcelona. In fact, it was the reverse.
Definitely. I was impressed by how high Chelsea's press was. When they got that goal, they won the ball so high up the field. Laia, I was interested to hear your thoughts on Barcelona's response to this aggressive defence from Chelsea. I mean, they, as Charlotte said, they did nullify Caroline Graham Hansen, who has been kind of the star player for Barcelona. Were you expecting more of a response from Barcelona to this tactic?
Yeah, and I think it's because I have seen a lot of teams trying what Chelsea did last Saturday, and they are the ones that have really succeeded doing a really defensive match, because it's the way to beat Barcelona and the kind of game that they normally do. I was expecting a bit more on maybe the midfield. I guess Jonathan Giralde decided not to put Alexia Putellas, to use it as a kind of in the second half or something like that. And you have more control with Kira Walsh probably and Patrick Jarro playing because he was super worried about the counterattacks of Chelsea. And I think it didn't work. I think Emma Hayes was so much better on tactics, even though she didn't want to talk about tactics after the match. I was surprised to see how they neutralized, as you were saying, Graham Hansen. And then Salma was the reference on attack, but I think she was a bit slower than we are used to see her. She was struggling controlling the ball a lot, and that gave Chelsea a bit of time to think and to hurt Barca, which I think they did. They lost a lot of balls. And I think the key was having that impatience to trying to score, and that feeling that, okay, what is happening? This normally is not happening to us. I think some players didn't have that feeling since probably, I mean, the Spanish ones, since the World Cup against Japan, for example.
The other teams are kind of doing what Barcelona do to them. So you were saying to me that Barcelona were the slow ones, but Chelsea were moving the ball a lot faster, weren't they? And they kind of slowing Barcelona down really stopped them, didn't they?
Yeah, I think it's something that you could see it in the Chelsea goal. They moved the ball so fast, and Barca was super slow trying to defend it. And yeah, normally when you go to Johan Cruyff and you see matches, you can see Barca playing super quickly and the opponent playing super slow. And the other day was like the opposite. And that's what it surprised me the most, because I have been watching Barca for a long time. I was there when they played their first game in the Champions League like 10 years ago. And I didn't have that feeling for a long, long time, seeing that the opponent were superior in the duels physically and defending.
Barcelona smother you, like they suffocate space. And that's why it's so difficult to play against them. But Erin Cuthbert, I spoke to her in the mix zone afterwards, and she said she felt comfortable. When you feel comfortable against Barcelona, that's a real statement. She felt comfortable in the shape that they maintained. They weren't chasing spaces. Because Barcelona normally move the ball so quickly, the tendency is to just chase the ball. And that's when those spaces open up. But for Cuthbert to say, yeah, in the 5-3-2, I felt comfortable in that shape. I was happy that if I made a mistake, my teammates would back me up, and we got the shape absolutely bang on, is what she said. And you just don't hear that, not against Barcelona.
And Laia was also pointing out the counter-attacks as well, kind of referencing back to that Japan game in the World Cup where Japan really harmed Spain. Obviously, a lot of the Spanish players are in the Barcelona team on the counter-attack. And I think it was interesting to see Chelsea's approach to the counter-attack as well, wasn't it, Charlotte? There were a lot of balls in behind to Ramirez, which seemed to create a threat to that Barcelona back line. And you've actually been watching a Chelsea game, haven't you? You watched the Aston Villa game with Mark Parsons, the former Washington Spirit, Portland Thorns and Netherlands manager. And he was kind of talking to you about that counter-attack tactics as well, wasn't he? What did you see, Charlotte?
Yeah, so it's Chelsea-Aston Villa, such a different game to Chelsea-Barcelona. But
yeah.
when Aston Villa were on the counter, Mark was saying you have two options, right? You can either go direct and try and convert the counter straight away, or you're more patient, you get more bodies into that final third, and you try and regain some kind of possession and composure just to get a breath back. Because if you hit on the counter and then you try and execute the counter and then you lose it, then you're defending for the next 10 minutes. And against someone like Barcelona, then you're just going to be exhausted. So Chelsea, as Aston Villa had to make a choice, right? Are we going to keep possession around that penalty disc? And I thought with the goal, they did that really well. Onabadjie conceded the throw-in. Chelsea press really, really high onto Barcelona's back line. And then that lovely 1-2 interchange between Nusken and Cuthbert.
Moritz. Cuthbert. Shaka Nusken. Back for Aaron Cuthbert. It's Cuthbert! Sensational Chelsea goal!
They weren't taking ridiculous long shots from outside the box, which were no-hopers. They actually played very well and composed around that Barcelona final third. And, you know, Ramirez, Mark was also saying, is how many players in the WSL, even in Europe, can eliminate defenders like Mayra Ramirez with her pace and her physicality and her hold-up play. I thought that was the best game she has played in a Chelsea shirt by far. But I think Chelsea will regret not taking that Mayra Ramirez chance to go 2-0 up. I think that was huge for them. But equally, you know, the penalty, Chelsea were lucky not to have a penalty against them. And then you think Parauelo's chance and Puteas' chance, it could have easily ended up 3-1. So Chelsea rode their luck, but I fear Barcelona in the second leg. I think they're going to come out and, yeah, they've got that vengeance. They've, as you said, Sophie, poked the bear and the bear can roar.
Yeah, well, let's go into those second leg ties next. Before we do, just want to mention that in the other semi-final first leg, the French clash, Lyon were 2-0 down against PSG, but they scored 3 goals in 6 minutes to win. What a comeback. Never write off the 8-time winners. Their second leg is on Sunday. Right, let's look ahead to the weekend next.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Catch all new episodes Thursdays on FX. Stream on Hulu.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
You're listening to Full Time Europe from The Athletic.
Sophie Penny, Charlotte Harper and Leia Federico Herrero here with you on Full Time Europe. Laia, this question has been coming to you since our introduction. Have Chelsea poked a bear? What do they need to do to turn it round? We heard the fans shouting, si se puede. They believe in them. They believe that Barcelona can turn it round. Do you think they will?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I saw the players hungry and with anger after the game. And I think it's something that really gives them fuel. The players needed that. They are kind of asleep during the season in a competition that they know that they are going to win before even start. So I think this is something that gives them, you know, that hunger for competition, that hunger for doing something. And I think it's going to be super crucial for them to have like cold mind. If they don't go through, it's okay because they have been winning everything. So it's not a big drama. For Barcelona, obviously, it's annoying, but it is not a big drama. It's not something that can shake the club or the team. But they have the tools. And I know that players are also angry because of like the attitude of some of the Chelsea players, almost all of them, because they were wasting a lot of time. And it is something that in Barcelona is not well seen. Players like Aitana Bonmatí say that they didn't like that. So I think they are hunger for vengeance, and it's going to be fun, the second leg, I think.
I didn't think the time wasting was that bad. Like, for Aitana to come out and say Chelsea were playing ugly, they frustrated Barcelona. The fouls that they committed were their own undoing for Barcelona, and I think Chelsea just managed the game very well. They got underneath Barcelona's skin, so... Yeah, of course, Hannah Hampton goes down to waste a couple of seconds and they run the clock down. But yeah, interesting comments from Aitana, and I don't think it sat well with Chelsea fans either.
It's just interesting to see the different approaches. I wanted to pick up on one point you mentioned, Laia, about kind of it's not the end of the world if they don't go through, because it's quite interesting. We actually do have two managers where it's their final season at their club where they've achieved a lot. You know, Jonathan Giraldes is leaving at the end of the season. So is there extra pressure on him to deliver? Like with Emma Hayes, we've spoken about it in previous podcasts, where it's just ridiculous the amount of attention she's getting, the amount of scrutiny she's under and pressure to perform in her final season. Is it the same with Jonathan Giraldes, or has he kind of already done it?
He doesn't have that pressure because he has won every important title with Barcelona. He has been father like 1 year ago, and I think he wants to finish his era in Barcelona in the best way possible, and that's winning a Champions League. But if not, you know, nobody is going to go and say you're a bad manager, because he has proven not to be. And the proof is that that staff is continue on the next year managing the team. And it's the same staff that has been there since 2019. They have proven to be like a good staff, and I don't think they have that pressure. I know that everybody wants Barca to win the Champions League, but at the same time, we have full belly.
That's so surprising for me, Laia. Like, this is the Champions League. If Barcelona don't even get to the final of the Champions League, I think people will be like pretty annoyed about that within the club, no?
Obviously. I mean, they are going to be annoyed, and it's something that they are not expecting. And there were some people crying the other day. So, I mean, it's obvious.
Was it you, Laia?
No, it wasn't me. But I saw some journalists crying after the match, saying, I wasn't expecting this. So obviously, it's something that annoys the team. And obviously, it's something that nobody wants. But at the same time, if it happens, I don't see that shaking the project. I see like a solid project, and it's football. It can happen. A team like Chelsea, which is a really good team, can go and beat you, and that's okay. I mean, that's okay in terms of the project, you know, not about being annoyed or being disappointed. It's something that obviously everybody will be if that happens.
So, Laia, just briefly, do we know who's replacing Jonathan Giraldes as the Barcelona manager after this season?
Yeah, I think it's likely to be Pere Romeu. He's one of the two assistants Giraldes has this season. One is Rafael Navarro and the other one was Pere Romeu. I think it was between the two of them. There was other option, which is like the Real Sociedad manager, Natalia Arroyo. But I think they thought that continue with the same staff was the best thing. And also because like the players ask for it. They are super happy with the staff they have. They are always giving them the tools and giving them a lot of videos and a lot of things, and they have constructed the best team in the world, or at least in Europe. So they wanted to give continuity to the staff.
Charlotte, it's obviously a completely different story at Chelsea. Well, it feels like it at the moment. The mood around Chelsea is kind of this pressure on Emma Hayes to win the Champions League in her final season. What do you think they need to do to kind of maintain their advantage and get through to that final?
Beating Barcelona is a big psychological boost for Chelsea. I just think they have to take it back to the bridge and not be overwhelmed by that pressure. It feels like because you're 1-0 ahead, you're in your home stadium, it feels like you should win the game, and not to put that pressure on themselves. Emma Hayes has always said it's half time. There's still another 90 minutes plus to play. It'll be really interesting, their game plan. It's kind of like a game of chess. Do Barcelona move? If they do change, how do Chelsea react? Do you stick with the same game plan because it works so well? Really interesting, the preparation going into it. Chelsea played Aston Villa, which they like. They say they like it because the momentum, it feels good. They only had one day to prepare, really, so not overthinking. It's the flip this time. Chelsea have a week to focus solely on that game, whereas Barcelona have a game on Wednesday. And I think, I'll throw to a lie, I think that's actually good for Barcelona to get that kind of defeat out of their system and go again. I don't know how you get James a bit more involved at Stamford Bridge. I think she will be key. But every Chelsea player had at least a 7-plus performance. I don't think there was a real weak link in that Chelsea team. Buchanan, the handball, but defensively they were solid. Midfield, disciplined, you know, in attack, they took their chances. I don't know, can Emma Hayes pull off that tactical master plan again against Barcelona? So it's going to be a huge, huge ask.
Laia, did you want to jump in about that extra game?
It's good because it's a game that it's against Levante Las Planas, and the stadium of Levante Las Planas is 10 minutes away from Barça training ground, so they don't have to travel or anything like that. So I think it's good. It's almost like a training match, and I can only think about the poor Levante Las Planas, because probably they are going to receive a lot of goals because Barça will be so mad and they will want to materialize that frustration into a winning or into goals or going to the match in the best condition possible. And probably it's going to be with Barça plan B squad. We usually say that Barça, if they will split their squad and have two different teams, probably it would be the ones fighting for the league anyway, because they have like a lot of players, so probably they are going to play with the not that usual players. But yeah, I think it's good for the second leg that they can compete before that, and they can win before the game. And probably the best way to beat Barca is continue doing like the strategy that Emma Hayes did in the first leg, and try to do it like efficiently like they did. But I can see Barca just playing so different than they did in the first leg. So I give them a chance, to be honest.
You think they'll play very differently, just faster and more like themselves?
Better, you know? Yeah, I think...
Full stop.
Yeah, because they continue doing what they normally do, but they were slower, they were more erratic, as we were mentioning before. So it's just trying to do it, but doing it good and be more focused. And I know that probably Graham Hansen will be so mad and she will want to play. And she is a player that you have to be afraid of. So I can see players just playing from anger. And I think that's what should worry Chelsea.
Well, perhaps they'll take out some of their frustration on Levante Las Planas before they get to Chelsea, but we'll see. We did a listener poll of who our listeners thought would win the second leg. Barcelona just edged it 51% of the vote, so it was quite tight there as well. There'll be a preview of the second leg on Saturday at Stamford Bridge on Straight Out of Cobham this week, so do give that a listen. And for coverage of the match, you can head to The Athletic. And of course, in France, PSG will be looking to overturn that 2-3 scoreline when they host Lyon. We've been speaking a little bit about how uncompetitive the Spanish league is and how it might be affecting Barcelona. So let's talk more about that next.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
You're listening to Full Time Europe with Sophie Penny.
Sophie Penny, Charlotte Harper and Leia Federio Herrero here with you on Full Time Europe. Aitana Bonmatí has been speaking about this issue with the Spanish league to the BBC this week. She said things haven't changed for the female players in Spain despite winning the World Cup, unlike in England when they won the Euros. They're picking up awards left, right and centre, but not much change is happening. Just this week, Bonmatí won the Laureus World Sportswoman of the Year and Spain won the Team of the Year, the first all-female team to win that award. But apparently it's not enough for changes to show at home. Laia, do you agree with Bonmatí that there hasn't been enough change since Spain won the World Cup? Are there any changes kind of being planned?
It's not that there has not been enough change. Nothing has changed. They are like, we are the best, but we are not going to say, okay, we have to invest on women's football because it's growing a lot. And we have like one of the best generation of players we have ever had and one of the best teams, like the best team in the world, obviously after the World Cup, and one of the best squads in Europe in Barcelona. So let's really believe in them. So nothing of that has changed. The only thing that has changed is like the structure of the Spanish Federation, because the players ask for it. I was super surprised when the Las 15 happened, like in October of 2022.
Where they signed that letter against their coach, Jorge Vilda.
Yeah, yeah, saying that they were not available until something changed because they weren't feeling good. It was before the World Cup, like 1 year before or something like that, 9 months before, after the Euros. So in the media outlets in Spain, you could see like some newspapers with the first page saying caprichos, you know, saying that the players should go to the national team even though whatever was happening. So nobody wanted to listen to them. And now you're seeing that Rubiales is in República Dominicana. The justice of Spain is looking for him because he has done some things bad, like some illegal contracts. He has been accused of paying orgies with the money of the federation. And now everything is popping up. But now nobody is saying, okay, you were right, to the players. Sorry for saying what we said about you and for doubting you. And this is something that is really frustrating because they have been activists without wanting it to be. And they are super exhausted and they are super tired of fighting against a system that really has shown them that they don't believe in them. So I kind of agree, obviously, with Aitana because she's right. I mean, they haven't invested in Liga F. Like the salary of La Liga, it's 16,000 euros per year, which is something that nobody can live with that. Yeah, they need to invest more. And the only thing I can see happening is that if nothing changes, the players that have won everything will want to be in more competitive leagues. And this is going to be something that obviously Spain will notice, you know, not as a not as a national team, but as a league. Because the league now, if you watch it, I don't know if it's politically correct to say that, but it's boring to see La Liga FA, because you see one team playing so good and playing so good against teams that seemed that they could be playing in the second or third division. So when you have a league where you have three different leagues, one with Barca trying to beat themselves every season, but with challenges that are creating for themselves and trying to be better as themselves, you have another league for some teams trying to compete for being in the Champions League, and then you have the rest, which is like most of the teams of La Liga, trying to be professional. And when you have that, this is very dangerous for the project, because the players want to be professional. And now they are starting to notice what they are capable of and the value they have. And if they don't feel valued, and I'm not talking about Barcelona, because I think they are doing the things in the right way. If they don't feel valued, probably this is going to contribute that the players will leave Liga EFE, and not only from Barcelona, but from other teams. And this is something that we can afford as a country and as a league. So they have to do something about it, because they are tired of waiting, and I can see their point.
Exactly. And speaking to you before, it's just so interesting to see how teams are trying to deal with that situation as well. You know, you were saying about having midweek training matches between the, you know, half the Barcelona team and the other half, and that's the most competitive game that they're getting. And you mentioned before kind of setting alternative goals, you know, I have to make this percentage of passes or things like that. And if they don't, even if they win 9-0 and they don't do their passing goal, that's what annoys them. So it's kind of quite sad to me, I think, that they're having to create those extra things that they have to do in the match to kind of make it worth it. And you were telling me about some of the lower teams in the league, because obviously we hear about Barcelona a lot, but you said the minimum salary is 16,000 euros for those teams. What is it like for those ones further down the table who are trying to be pro, you know, in terms of how they get to games? I know we heard Levante struggling with their finances. That's why they sold Mayra Ramirez to Chelsea for so much. You know, what's the story kind of lower down the table?
Yeah, there have been like a lot of different cases. For example, I remember Rayo Vallecano. Now they are not in the first division, but they used to like 2 or 3 years ago. And I remember one scene of them in an empty dressing room, because they have had to sell everything. And Rayo Vallecano is one team that is in the men's first division. So it's like a kind of a historic team. They have money enough to pay for a dressing room. And the players were sitting on the floor eating a sandwich after the game. So that was super poor. And that image just was blowing the minds of everybody. Just saying, okay, to have a team and treat them like that, don't have a team. You know, and let the players go to other teams that can really treat them like they have to. And the situation is teams playing at training at 9 p.m., 10 p.m., something that Barca did not that far away. I remember going in 2014, 10 years ago, with Alexia in the team, and they were training at 10 p.m. because they had to wait for the players to go study, work and whatever, and then go to work. And we are talking now to the actual Champions League winner, you know? So it's kind of weird how La Liga EFE continue to have like different realities that remember like the Barca from 10 years ago, and you have like the best team there. It's like, for example, Valencia, when they have to go to play to a city and it's 13 hours away by bus, they go by bus instead of saying, okay, we are taking a plane. And sometimes the same weekend, the men's team has to play in that same city and the women's team is going by bus and the men's team is going by plane. It's what the players are asking for. I mean, they just want like to have a professional league, to have the conditions to play and to be able to just focus on football, and that's it. Even though they have like a convenio, which I don't know like the exact word in English for saying that. It's like
an agreement.
Yeah, it's kind of an agreement to say that, okay, we have these conditions and this is the minimum you can have in this league. Even though they have that and they have fought so hard for that, I can see Barca just being 10 years ago from, for example, the English league.
It's like the other teams are kind of 10 years behind Barcelona, it seems like. Sounds like from your description. I mean, Charlotte Bonmatí mentioned England in her comments, you know, what England have done after the Euros. What did you make of the comments on this situation? And are there things that England did that Spain could possibly look to do?
I think England, in terms of professionalism, infrastructure, facilities, and as a league as a whole, are that step ahead of Spain, even though there are definitely still things that England can improve on. I wrote a report after or during the World Cup about, you know, some players not having boot sponsors or the inconsistency between different teams at the top of the WSL and the bottom of the WSL. But I feel like Spain is just exemplified that times 100. If you look at it under not even a microscope, it's just so obvious. The big difference between the WSL and the rest of the European leagues is that it's the most competitive. You know, you have Chelsea, Manchester City, Arsenal, Manchester United going into this season that you could have argued that they would have won the title at the start of the season. Now, that's just incomparable to La Liga F, where you have Barcelona winning all the time and Real Madrid are 9 points below them, but there's always a gap. And you've got Tottenham Hotspur, Aston Villa, Liverpool pushing those top four. And it comes down to investment, professionalism of standards and the investment that the clubs are putting in and what the WSL clubs, and especially, well, all of them linked to their parent club, is that before they kind of had to do it out of a moral obligation, whereas now they see it as a commercial opportunity. I don't think that is recognised at all in La Liga FA apart from Barcelona.
And I think it's interesting to think about the knock-on effect of this. Does this mean that we are likely to see players potentially leaving Spain and moving to places like England? We know some big Barcelona contracts are up at the end of the summer, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, we know that Alexia Putellas, Lucy Bronze and Mariona Caldente are ending their contracts at the end of the season. I think the three of them are likely to renew, but we shall see what happens. But yeah, I think Barcelona has still, obviously, because they are like on the top of what they have been in the recent years, but they have that spark still. But I'm talking like in more like in 5 years or something like that, if nothing changes, players will be bored and will be wanting more. I can blame them for that. So I can see players leaving and trying to be more motivated in other clubs. We have seen Aitana Bonmatí talking so good about the Women's Super League. I don't think it's a coincidence, you know. So it's something that the Federation and La Liga FA will have to try to do a more convincing league, a more competitive league, and try to keep their talent, which they have, because they have started to do something and the players have grown a lot, obviously thanks to Barcelona in part. So I think it's just creating something that it's attractive to see, and it's attractive for the players, and it's attractive for the people to go and see the matches, because sometimes some people say to me, I like seeing Barcelona, but I only watch Clásicos because of the rivalry that is supposed to be there, and I only watch games in the Champions League because I see like an opponent playing. If I see La Liga FA, I don't see an opponent playing. I only see Barça trying to be the best they can, and they are, but it's so boring because you have the feeling that if they really wanted to, they could win like 15-0. And it's something that it's crazy to think about it, and it's not attractive.
Competitive matches for people to watch. And then I guess when you've got more eyes on the game, you can get more people in, more money, more sponsorship, and then it can just grow and grow.
And the possibility to open Camp Nou when it's again available, or Montjuic more times, because they are not doing it because they don't want to see the stadium half empty. And if you are opening every weekend the stadium for the women's team, and it's not, the attendance is not like what we saw in the recent years or the last Saturday against Chelsea, it's something that will give a bad image of the club. And for mm-hmm. now, the games that you are proposing, like La Liga Efe, they are not that attractive to put 90,000 people in a stadium, you know, and I can get that point.
It's interesting to see how it's impacting them commercially and in a football sense as well. We'll see how that develops, and we'll see if Aitana Bonmatí does make that move to the WSL that everyone in England would absolutely love. Obviously, her contract runs out in 2025, and only positive sounds in what she was saying, so we can't get too carried away with that story. Time to wrap up this discussion here. Muchas gracias, Laia. Y Carlota, can I call you Carlota?
Sí, claro. Muchas gracias.
You can read about everything we've been speaking about on The Athletic. Go to theathletic.com/WSL and do send in your questions to fte@theathletic.com on email or direct to me on Twitter @SophiePenny_. Before you go, also please rate, review and hit follow wherever you get your podcasts. Speak next week. Adeu.
You've been listening to Full Time Europe, part of the Athletic Football Podcast Network. The producer was Sophie Penny, and the executive producer was Abby Patterson. To discover and listen to other great Athletic podcasts just like this one, including our brand new daily football briefing, search for The Athletic on Apple, Spotify, and everywhere else you get your audio on demand.
The Athletic.